Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. There are several phases to this or any fire season, and one of them is the period for arguing about the causes of fires and what might prevent similar fires or at least the spread of them in the future. Most people fall somewhere in a very broad range between letting all wildfires burn themselves out and heavily managing land to make it nearly impossible for fires to break out. Researchers from Humboldt State University and Oregon State University studied a fire to gauge the differences land management has on a fire's intensity. They published their works earlier this year. Harold Zald is an assistant professor in Humboldt State University's Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources. He is the lead author and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good to have you here. What was the basic issue you were looking to address here?
Well, the main issue with this study is we really want to look at two things. What is the relative importance of different variables or factors driving fire severity? And then more specifically, has intensive plantation forestry, is that associated with higher fire severity?
And so where did you look around to see where the data for this could come from?
So we really keyed on one single fire, the Douglas Complex, back in 2013, about 50,000 acres roughly, that burned in southwest Oregon. And we were really interested in it specifically because it was right smack in what are known as Oregon-California Railroad lands, or ONC lands.
Which we describe fairly often, and I think we probably have a few people scratching their heads when we talk about the checkerboard, but when the grant lands were made to the Oregon and California Railroad way back in the 19th century, they were done in alternate sections of 1 mile square. So it really does look like a checkerboard of a section of private land and then a section of public land and then a section of private land, and they alternate. It very much looks like a checkerboard on a map.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, as a kid, people talking about you can see the Great Wall of China from space. But I recommend any listeners hop onto Google Earth, look at southwestern Oregon, start zooming in, and pretty soon you see the checkerboard from satellite imagery from space.
So what did the checkerboard offer in the way of a place to test some theories?
So the checkerboard is really nice from a research perspective. It's essentially a natural experiment. When we want to look at things like different management strategies and say we just look at federal land, what we find is that it's really hard to tease out the different factors that drive fire severity. When we think of fire behavior, we often talk about the fire behavior triangle, and that is fuels, topography, and weather. And one of the problems with management's one of the only ways we can alter the fuels. It's the only real thing we can kind of play with in the fire behavior triangle. But you look in most areas and look at contrasting management, there's other factors that confound the analysis. Topography is different, forest type is different, things like that. But in the ONC with the checkerboard, essentially we can really drill down on the management side because most of the other things in any given fire are very similar in the checkerboard, like topography is very similar. The overall forest type is very similar.
The weather
is very similar.
So basically you get two sides of the triangle that are going to be very similar. The only real difference is the fuels?
Exactly.
And so the Douglas Complex, is this the only place, really, you've had a chance to look at as broad a region, or at least as broad a burned area?
So we really keyed in on the Douglas Complex because there was high-quality data available. There's undoubtedly since then been other fires in kind of the ONC landscape. That'd be an opportunity to follow up and do more of the same research. But this was a really easy one because it was a large fire smack in the middle of the checkerboard with high-quality data.
So it really gave you a chance, it sounds like, to make an apples-to-apples kind of comparison?
Yeah, and there's always going to be some things that you can't control. It's not a perfect kind of in-the-lab kind of experiment, but as a natural experiment, it does allow us to control more so than a lot of other studies have in the past.
And so the research is titled Severe Fire Weather and Intensive Forest Management Increase Fire Severity in a Multi-Ownership Landscape. So you got two variables there. Tell us about the keys to the findings here.
Yes. So the key findings were the single most important driver of fire severity was fire weather. And that shouldn't be a big surprise. When you have really hot temperatures, really low humidity, and high wind speeds, that's going to do many things. It's going to dry out fuels and make it easier to combust and easier for fire to spread. What was interesting, though, is our kind of second finding of this was that after you account for fire weather, the next most important predictors were how old a forest is, the stand age, and just the ownership. Was it federal or private industrial ownership?
And how different was that on either side of the ownership line?
Yeah, so once you account for everything else that we're able to look at, pre-fire fuels, fire weather, topography, fires burned about 30% more severely in the private industrial ownership versus the federal, the Bureau of Land Management ownership.
And when you say 30% more severely, what are the measurements of the severity?
So we, because we want to look at a large landscape, you really have basically one choice, which is looking using satellite imagery. So we use something that's called relative normalized burn ratio. And so that's basically a metric of pre- to post-fire spectral change from the Landsat family of satellite sensors.
All right, so you're basically looking and making some assumptions visually?
Yeah, so there's a wealth of literature on this where people have looked at these burn ratios from satellite imagery and compared them to actual ground data of burn severity. And in essence, what the satellite is picking up on, this metric, is changes in chlorophyll and changes in soil moisture and darkness. And they do quite a good job of capturing mortality of either the canopy cover of a forest or as well as something like the basal area or cross-sectional area of wood. But it's easier to think of it more as you're looking at the amount of canopy that dies.
Professor Harold Zald is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He works in the Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources at Humboldt State University. He is the co-author with Chris Dunn of Oregon State University in a paper out earlier this year about severe fire weather and intensive forest management increase fire severity in a multi-ownership landscape. They really looked at the checkerboard in southwestern Oregon, specifically in the Douglas Complex of Fires in the 2013 fire season. You can join this conversation on the Exchange. Register your thoughts about how you think forests might be managed or what sorts of things we should be looking for to figure out how to manage forests with fires. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. The email address jx@jeffnet.org. So how different, for example, on the private land were the tree ages and species from what you found on the other side of the line on the public land?
So there's two kind of main things to think about here. And one is ages. And so as trees are older, their bark gets thicker, and the height at which their canopy is gets higher up. So thicker bark, higher canopies on older forests versus thinner bark, canopies are closer to the ground in the plantations. And that's important because both of those things, thicker bark and higher canopy, help protect trees from dying in a fire.
So they really just leave, well, first of all, it's hard to get through the bark, but if the canopy is higher, it's just harder for the fire to get up that high?
Exactly. Yeah, if you have a fire that's on the ground, it's much harder for it to get up into the canopy and burn the canopies if there's a big gap in fuels, vertical fuels.
All right, so, but then I guess what you're saying is on a plantation where there is a more uniform species of tree and uniform height of tree, then the canopy is going to be all the same.
Yeah, so that's the kind of the big second part, is that it's not just the kind of vertical fuels or the bark thickness. You have to think about this horizontally kind of in space as well. Once a fire gets up into the canopy, if you have a real kind of even homogeneous canopy of similar sized age trees, and their canopies are touching, that's a really much easier thing in extreme fire weather for the fire to carry through the crown, through the canopy. When you have an older forest, it's patchy. It's not an even forest. There's maybe individual trees or small mortality events that have happened over time. There are patches of shrubs. There's patches where regeneration happened differently. And that patchiness is really important for moderating the fire behavior and the fire spread.
It's interesting to think in these terms, but what you're saying, in essence, I think I'm hearing, is that it's as hard in some cases for a fire to move through the bumpy, underbrushy area in a real forest that's been around for a while, as opposed to the pretty easy stroll you get through a plantation.
Yeah, I think an easy phrase would be complexity begets complexity. If you have a complex structure, over space, a complex structure of fuels, that's going to result in more complex fire behavior and fire effects. you have a simpler forest, you may be able to suppress fire or moderate fire behavior at a certain level. But once it gets into the canopy, it's much harder to moderate that because you have this fairly simple and continuous fuel for it to spread.
So what was the tree mortality like on the private land versus the public land? I mean, were there was anything left standing alive on the private land?
There is, but overall, there's no question that there's much higher overall mortality for any given acre on the private land versus the public land.
Is that partly also due to the density of the trees? Were they closer together? Were there more of them?
Well, that's a good question. That's a little bit harder to get at, in part because some of our data is kind of limited. Despite having really high-quality data, there's some things that we don't have in this study as great of a handle as we would like. We have pretty good information from the standpoint of kind of total fuels, but what we don't have is really detailed information about kind of the pattern of kind of individual trees and density of trees at a really fine scale.
Again, Harold Zold, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an assistant professor at Humboldt State University in the Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources, teamed up with Chris Dunn of Oregon State University to study the Douglas Fire Complex in 2013 to get a look at how differently fire distributes across a landscape that's otherwise fairly similar, the big difference being in the fuels on the public and private sides of the line. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I'm about 5 miles from the Taylor Creek fire right now, so this is of real interest to me.
Yes.
I'm wondering what is going on with your costs. It costs a lot of money to fight a fire. There's thousands of people out there fighting a fire right now a few miles from my house. What does it cost to treat the land so that the fuels are not there, so the intensity of fires we're seeing, you know, are here? Is it more cost-effective to treat the land, or is it more cost-effective on a case-by-case basis to suppress fires the way we're doing it now?
All right, right to dollars. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it. Harold?
Well, thanks, Paul. That's a hundreds of millions of dollars question, and it's a tough one. At a basic level, we're not going to be able to keep fire from this landscape. This fire burned historically. It will burn again. And so the big question is, what are the most cost-effective ways to meet kind of the ecological and societal objectives? And one of the big problems with a multi-owner landscape in particular is you have these really contrasting objectives. And there's no judgment to this. It's just how it is. When you think of risk, and you think of risk being this combination of exposure of your assets or goods, the hazard or likelihood of an event taking place, accounting for things like intensity and probability, and the vulnerability of it, how susceptible is it, how unable is it to cope with a disturbance, a fire. One of our big problems with these multi-owner landscapes is that we know fire doesn't acknowledge ownership or jurisdictional boundaries, but these different owners have quite different objectives. A private industrial owner's objective is to produce wood products, while, say, old growth reserve on federal land, the objective is maybe a combination of wildlife habitat, maybe carbon sequestration, watershed quality, and the real hard part here is that we know that what we're doing isn't terribly effective, that we have to do some combination of letting more fire burn as well as thinning in places. But you can't thin the whole landscape. That's been pretty well established that there is vastly more land that probably could be thinned than we have the resources or time to thin. And so we get in this really tricky kind of decision-making loop and planning loop of how do we manage a landscape when you have all these conflicting objectives.
You had mentioned how stark it is just to look at the checkerboard, you know, that you can see the checkerboard from the satellite imagery, like you can see the Great Wall of China from space, as you pointed out. But then I wonder, post-fire, if you had the same sort of thing, if even though there was the potential for a fairly broad swath of black and gray on the landscape, if you could still see the checkerboard on the satellite imagery after the fire had gone through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Part of that is the fire effects, as well as part of that for a major fire in the checkerboard is what happens after that fire. So you're much more likely to see salvage logging on the private industrial land, rightly so from their decision-making process. They now have trees that are dead that are about to greatly diminish in their value as wood products. They have a really short period of time to harvest them. And so there's much more incentive for private industrial to do salvage logging, try to recoup some losses, while on federal land there is some salvage logging, but it's less total amount, and it's also more contentious and also often gets kind of into a legal and litigative environment where it takes longer for any planned salvage logging on federal land to happen.
You mentioned earlier, Harold, that the triangle of fire is weather, topography, and fuels. Weather and topography were roughly the same here, and the fuels were the difference. And I wonder if there was anything in here that there was a particularly great surprise. I mean, here again, you had a chance to make an apples-to-apples comparison, but was there anything in here that even so jumped out at you as like, wow, this is something we didn't expect?
I'm not sure if it's so much something we didn't expect, but the magnitude of one thing in particular, which was, well, there's two things. One was stand age. We saw young forests under 50 years old had pretty high severity. But once we got to about 80 years old, there's from kind of comparing a 30-year-old stand to a 50-year-old stand, there's a pretty dramatic decline in fire severity. And that was interesting, that once we got to about maybe 80 or 100 years old, fire severity didn't change that much, going from 80 all the way out to like 200 or 250 years old. And so that was kind of interesting, because it suggests there might be a little bit more wiggle room in management, that it's not just about young forest versus old growth. There's this middle area that seems to be really important, which is what a lot of the landscape is.
So then that begs the question, what should people extrapolate from the research, and then what cautions do you give in not thinking this might extend to other landscapes?
So in cautions, I think this research applies pretty well to ONC lands in southwestern Oregon, maybe a bit of Northern California as well, in these productive west side, kind of Douglas fir and west side mixed conifer forests. I think this would extrapolate pretty well. I'm sorry, what was the first question again?
It was what should people extrapolate from this, and then what are the cautions? I mean, so what can people take away from this and assume will work in other places, and what should they take caution with?
So the big thing I think in caution is you wouldn't want to apply this to a dramatically different forest type. In particular, you wouldn't want to apply this to, say, a much drier, say, ponderosa pine forest. Or any much lower productivity forest. The reason being is that the time it takes for those forests to grow and develop a continuous canopy is much longer. And so you're more likely to see in those forests intensive forest management actually having more of a moderating effect, where it's possible that intensively managed forests in a dry ponderosa pine forest may actually show much lower, potentially, lower fire severity.
I noticed that when we posted the original story from a couple of months ago that Jess Burns from our newsroom did about this study, that you got instant peer review, it looks like, in the comment section of our website, where somebody said, this is an observational study done on one fire after the fact using non-parametric statistics with zero replication. And this reviewer found the premise questionable at best, but should bear further review if valid. Are other people trying to duplicate the work you've done? Because it certainly seems like the opportunity is there, given the severity or the frequency of fire on the landscape.
Yeah, so one of the big issues with looking at fire is there's kind of two different approaches. And one is you look at really broad regional kind of approaches. You look at many different fires. The other approach is you look at fires that you have particularly good information about. And So one of the things we're really interested in is two things. It'd be great to expand this out and look at more fires in the ONC and just simply see, does the general premise hold? Does intensive forest management increase fire severity? But in some ways, I think a more kind of policy and management relevant question is, we looked at severity, but what we didn't look at is kind of risk across the landscape. And what I mean by that is, what is the influence of, say, one ownership type as a fire comes through and affecting the fire severity in the adjacent ownership? And that has really big management and policy implications if that can be teased out.
So it's not just what's on your own land, but what's on the land next to yours.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a wealth of information that you can modify stand-level behavior. You can thin a forest. You can do different things, treating fuels on, say, the forest on your property. But how good will that be if the adjacent landowner has a forest type and fuels that are going to burn really intensely and really severely? Will that intensity basically kind of have some negative consequences on your land, even though you did, you know, your best effort to thin and try to alter fire behavior?
And Harold, before we go, I want to bring up the fact that when I spoke to you on the phone yesterday to confirm your attendance today, we talked about the fact that you saw the car fire very soon after it started. And I wonder and I don't want people to think that, you know, that this is, you know, just us fire geeks talking about fun stuff here. I understand lots of people have had their lives affected in very bad ways by the car fire, but do you see research opportunities in it?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, obviously, it's really hard that people have died, people have hurt, people have lost their property. But, you know, every time there's a big fire, we have to think of it as an opportunity to try to learn whenever possible. And it's not just research for research's sake. It's trying to have a better idea of how can we manage these forests, how can we better address things like fire suppression in ways that maybe help try to save lives, in the most efficient way possible. And also, you know, what are the consequences in the area of the car fire? What's that forest going to look like long term?
Right. Lots of stuff to study there, and lots of stuff to study with all the fires. And there are many at the moment, as we have pointed out quite a few times over the course of our newscast today. Harold Zald is a professor or assistant professor at Humboldt State University in the Department of Forestry and Wildland Resources. He and Chris Dunn from Oregon State put out the paper Severe Fire Weather and Intensive Forest Management Increase Fire Severity in a Multi-Ownership Landscape. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks. Pleasure to be on the show.